morning we met, and there were a number of bills that I held over from this morning's meeting. And we have before us one of those bills, and that is SB 137. We'll also be hearing SB 48. Present at the table, Senator Wilkins, Senator Lehman, Senator Donnelly, Senator Olson, Senator Hoffman, Senator Osterman, Senator Green, and myself, Senator Kelly. Chris, you want to come up? We'll go ahead and just sit there for a few minutes. And we I don't think we need a testimony or anything like that. We've got the physicians negotiation bill before us, SB 37. There was a CS that we discussed briefly this morning but did not adopt. It is version B. The CS for version B puts back in the Labor and Commerce, in the Labor and Commerce Committee, there was some language that was added and some changes that were made, and that is consistent with what is in version B, and we need to amend it to put back some language exempted nurses from this, the provisions of this bill. The language was changed in a subsequent CS, and I want to go back to what was discussed in Labor and Commerce. This was the amendment that was agreed upon with the Nurses Association. So what I'd like to do now is, first of all, adopt version B, and then put in the amendment which brings it back to the version that we had in Labor and Commerce that the nurses agreed on. So if I get a motion for somebody from someone for version B. Senator Wilkins?
Chairman, I would move that the substitute for Senate Bill 37, LS-0323, backslash B, Bannister 327, be considered in lieu of the, be considered as a working document.
Any objections? Without objection, version B is adopted. Senator Wilkins, could you move amendment number one, please?
Chairman, I move amendment number one.
I think we pretty much explained that when we were talking about the CS. Are there objections to amendment number one? Without objection, amendment number one is adopted. There is a conceptual amendment that I want to move, and that is on page 8, line 30. There is a sunset date on this. That sunset date was brought in on the bill early on in the process when there were a lot of fears about the bill and the possibility of driving health care costs up. Since then, most of the concerns of people have been addressed. There were provisions put into the bill that was completely voluntary. There were veto provisions added by, so that both sides could veto the negotiations as before they would move on to price. A number of other things that softened up the impact the bill may have if it worked out in some kind of worst case scenario. Those are all gone. The need for a sunset, I think, is not necessary. My fear would be that the corporations that were involved in negotiations with physicians, some of these corporations have been around since the American Revolution, and they can probably wait 4 years or 5 years on the sunset, just wait for this to go away. So we're going to leave it in there because I don't think the bill represents near the threat that it was perceived to have represented when it first came out. So with that, I would move the deletion on page 8, line 30 and 31, which is the sunset provisions, which are the sunset provisions. Are there objections? Hearing none, amendment number 2, conceptual. We'll have to get that. There's a fiscal note that I want to address as well. It is admin. No, it's not admin. Just a moment. Chris, I think it is the admin. I think I gave you. I think I gave you my copy. It's not in my packet. It talked about the possible impacts to the state insurance plan, which is a self-insurance plan. I neglected to tell you that the version B took out the self-insureds. This bill does not apply to the self-insureds. And so there won't be that impact to the state. So the admin fiscal note dated March 14th and March 15th, 2001, to the Labor and Commerce version. I would move that we zero out that fiscal note. Senator Green?
Okay, tell me, repeat what you just said. You've taken out the provision where this would apply to anyone who is a self-insured?
That's correct.
Okay, what is the impact of that? Kind of walk me through that again so I understand. I'm a little confused.
That the state would not have to, the state would not be in a position, nor would municipalities and most of the unions, that they wouldn't have to abide by this and go into negotiations with physicians.
Do you know what segment of
May I clarify that?
Mm-hmm.
It isn't that they wouldn't have to. It is that the physicians would not have the protection of a state action doctrine if they entered into negotiations with self-insureds. It leaves insurance companies.
But again, do you know what segment of the population is left by removing all self-insureds?
No, I don't.
I'm wondering if it's kind of kill a mouse with a shotgun.
Senator Wilkins, could I get you to move the zeroing out of that, of the admin fiscal note dated March 14th and March 15th?
Mr. Chairman, I move to adopt the fiscal note of the administration dated March 14th.
The zero out?
With a zero.
Okay.
So,
$34 to $88 a month. That's what I was saying. It was an indeterminate fiscal note in the first place.
Well, Mr. Chairman, with all due respect, I really wish I understood where we were, what this is about a little bit better. I'm very concerned. Your legislative findings, information, I find rather, I don't know, I don't agree with. If we could approach this where if we have a problem, we're trying to solve it rather than casting aspersions on one of many people involved in the presentation and health care and medical care and all the things that we do. And I still think there is an impact.
Hey, ma'am, I'm not sure what you meant by casting.
Well, in the legislative finding information. There are, however, in which a health benefit plan dominates the market to the degree that fair negotiations...
I just said a person. You said a person. I know, you said a person.
No, I didn't say the word person, so I don't think. But anyway, it doesn't matter. I still don't see how, if you remove half of the... Because I am very curious in the state of Alaska, how many people are left when you take out self-insurance. But I know when we were doing the discussion on the state of Alaska becoming self-insured and the impact of self-insurance on the CHIA, the Comprehensive Health Insurance Act, we suddenly took out a major player in what was that premium tax that went to pay for CHIA because self-insureds don't have to participate in that. And we're ending up with a very small pool out there of people who participate in private plans that are not self-insured. So I truly do wonder if we're targeting this at a very small group of people left. If you're taking out people who are insured through a self-insurance pool.
We can discuss that later, but right now what we're trying to do is we've got a motion on a fiscal note, which we recommend to zero out the fiscal note, which was an indeterminate fiscal note in the first place, because of the section which takes it out. And then we can discuss that afterwards. Are there objections to zeroing out the admin fiscal note dated March 14th and March 15th? Yeah. That fiscal note has been removed. Senator Green?
I'm not sure. My comments weren't germane to the fiscal note, but it's well, the other thing we forget, though, very often when we're doing legislation, is the fiscal note applies to states and its employees only. We may say that this is an indeterminate fiscal note and we don't think it's going to impact, but that does, and since the state is self-insured, that may well be true, but that doesn't say anything about the rest of the population out there who may experience a cost increase because of this. If Bob Lohr is on the line, I'd like to know, am I just totally off base, or misunderstand it?
I don't think you necessarily misunderstand it. It's just my only objection to what you were saying is that it was that you were talking to the fiscal note. If you want to ask Bob Lohr some questions, that would be fine. Now, in I had heard that by the implementation of this, that we would have between 15% and 25% increases in the health care costs in the state of Alaska. I don't believe that for a minute. It's a completely voluntary program. The insurance companies want to say, no, we don't want to negotiate with you. That's the end of it. There can be no retaliations by the physicians. There can be no boycotts by the physicians. And I just don't see that as driving costs through the roof. Yet, that's what I was talking about earlier today, about the sky is falling, the cries of the sky is falling by some of the people who have objected to this bill, which is a completely voluntary bill. I've never taken their objections as seriously as maybe they meant them.
Well, if I could just respond, Mr. Chairman, I've not heard that.
That's not what I'm basing my comments on. I've not even heard from anyone on this. I'm just saying that if we... the pool of people were, and that are involved, when this is when we've removed, I mean, and I understand the reason for it, but we're getting to a very small group of people here. If you're talking about insurance coverage of these groups that are not self-insured, because that's third party as well, but it's, they're exempted, so.
I mean, kind of like that's all the work. If how many insurance carriers? Okay, Bob, could you answer my rambling questions, please?
Mr. Laura, it's just almost impossible to hear you. If something could be done at that end of the line.
Thank you. We'll try to get a better connection.
Are you still there, Mr. Laura?
Yes,
Mr.
Chairman.
This is, yeah, I think so. Okay, thank you. Go ahead. Hey, you're still having a hard time there. Why don't you go ahead and maybe call Senator Green if she still has reservations.
If you could just tell me the percentage, that's all I need. Reduced pool, or is it typical for that reduced pool to then try to enter a self-insured pool? And what would the impact on CHIA be on that, of that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Green has a CHIA
Thank you. Thanks, Ms. Jones.
The, as I said before, one of the assumptions is, I think that Mr. Lohr is making, is that prices will be raised because they're negotiating prices. In the bill, there have to, either side has a veto power on whether they even negotiate price. So if the insurance companies don't even want to talk about price under this bill, they don't have to talk about price. Again, this constant talk about prices being raised, I think, is uncalled for. It doesn't follow what is in the bill. If you don't have to talk about price, or if either side can veto whether you even discuss it or not, I don't see it as pushing prices through the roof or even raising them. Quality of care issues are a different story. Now, what constitutes emergency services, and there can be some impacts on price for those kinds of things, but they're far less than actually sitting down and negotiating price, which the insurance companies do not have to do in this bill. We'll take just a brief please. Were there any other questions on the provisions of the bill or the fiscal notes or any amendments that we had? Brings the bill before us. Are there any comments on the bill as amended? Senator Wilkins, could you give me a motion, please?
Mr. Chairman, I would move to report Senate Bill 37 from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Are there objections? Hearing none, Senate Bill 37 is moved from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. Next, we're going to hear Senate Bill 48. Senator Wilkin.
All right, Senate Bill 48.
Senator Wilkin, do you want to brief it easy to get this done?
I just wanted to get this out of my way.
I'm ready to go. Go for it.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for hearing Senate Bill 48 tonight. A couple of things have happened in the last few days. And you appointed a subcommittee chaired by Senator Lehman. And I'd ask that you ask him for a report on that. And then I've had some suggestions on how to make the bill better. We have before you a blank CF, version R, Cook, 328. And I'd like to explain those changes and adopt that CS. So, Mr. Chairman, would you like the subcommittee report before I do that?
Yes. Senator Lehman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Subcommittee consisting of Senator Wilkins, Senator Hoffman, and myself listened to testimony from interested parties from literally across the state, primarily, I would say, the interior region of Alaska. But there were people from Western Alaska and Juneau. And while there was testimony in favor of the legislation on behalf of the city of Cordova, there were a number of people basically living in fairly remote Alaska who whose response was, we don't want no government. We want services, but we don't want to pay for it. Essentially, was
past 6:30. That's the
I took notes on a number of the comments, and I don't have them right in front of me. But we did listen to people, and I think heard from a number of Alaskans. And there were no specific amendments offered by the people who testified that I recall. So we present the legislation back to the full committee.
Thank you for that riveting.
That's awesome. I don't understand the words you said.
Senator Hoffman, can you do better?
There was recommendations. I think that some people said that if there were going to be boroughs, that they felt that they should vote on those boroughs. I remember that comment. And I might state that of all the testimony that we had, there was one person that supported Burroughs in the testimony, and the other 20 people that testified were opposed to it. So it was a slam dunk on if there was any recommendation. It was overwhelmingly in opposition to the legislation. The other point that I would like to make, I guess, if you looked at the mandatory boroughs, there was someone from every recommended model borough that opposed the legislation.
Senator Hoffman, what were those areas that were recommended?
The one that was specifically was the Valdez borough. I think everyone outside of Valdez, Cordova supported it, but Valdez was in opposition to the model borough that they had, and everybody else that testified were in opposition to it.
Thanks, Senator Hoffman.
You're welcome. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would make a couple of comments about the subcommittee meeting. First, I would commend Senator Lehman for running a good meeting. It was difficult, as you can imagine, and I know Senator Hoffman, even though we're on different sides of the table, different sides of the issue that day, I know we both appreciated Senator Lehman's courtesy, and also Senator Olson sat with us for the whole meeting, and I just wanted to thank him for that. I'd also say that I haven't made an effort. I've had volunteer support for this. I've not gone out and asked for groups to line up behind the bill. I can tell you that there's a tremendous amount of support, but you can understand that this puts people in difficult positions, and I haven't asked them to go there because I think the facts of the case, the facts of the bill, and the intent of the bill speaks to the effort and the reason why it should pass. So having said that, I will say that Eagle River Chamber of Commerce has taken up the issue and given a support of the bill, and they did that voluntarily on behalf of one of their members. So I'm pleased to report that, and I suspect there'll be others that fall into that group, although today I'm not encouraging it. I'm relying on the bill itself to carry the reasons why we should pass it. I'm assuming, Mr. Chairman, that we'll adopt version R. And if that's the case, I will speak to version R, explain the four changes, or the four additions. There are four.
Senator Wilkin, are you moving version R?
I'd like to move version R as our working document. That's for Canadian Substitute Senate Bill 48.
Are there objections?
I'd object until he explains the changes.
Thank you. Four changes. Go please to page 4. Go to line 16 through 18. Line 16 in the middle, it starts, there's new wording. It starts with, in addition, the commission shall hold at least one public hearing in each community with at least 400 residents and in each home rule or first class city located in the area. We've heard this in testimony in the previous committee and again at this committee. People want to make sure, even though the intent has been on the record by the LBC, that they will do this. This clarifies it, that they will, and they have experience in this, and that back in the late 80s and early 90s during the model borough effort, they undertook this process and what they did, and it's allowed by state law. The LBC split themselves up into groups of 3 and 2 so they could cover the same territory. And I would just comment that from the department, that does not have a fiscal impact. They will be able to follow through on this without an additional cost to the people of the state. That's change number 1. Change number 2, same page, line 4, line 23 through 26. Line 23, the words and incorporation or annexation was each incorporation or annexation. And then down to line 5, starting with, however, the commission may submit not more than 2 petitions to the legislature under this subsection each year. We've talked about from the beginning that this is a bill that sells patience as much as anything, as much as it sells fairness. I'm patient. I said I'd wait 10 years for this study to come back of these 19 areas, and that's exactly what will happen if they do 2 a year. I suspect that that's a very ambitious schedule. And I also suspect that once this system is in place, validated, and the people in unorganized Alaska that can help pay for education and can support government like others in Alaska, I think that they'll see that it may be in their best interest to form under existing law on their own. So there'll be some incorporations that won't even be necessary. But this takes care of some of the problems that people are fearful that this will be a gross or a mass wholesaling of unorganized Alaska into boroughs. I'm very comfortable with this, and again, I'd say this is an ambitious schedule. That's change number two. Change number three, page five, line 12 through the word voter, and line 15 is new. If I can explain, the state law requires that if there's a borough incorporated and they're going to have use taxes or sales taxes, that those have to be voted on by the people in the new borough. It follows that if a community, if a new suggested borough, it's not appropriate for them to have a property tax, there may be other ways to fund their government, and there are four boroughs like that in Alaska that don't have property tax. It follows on that if it does require property tax, that they could then, even though the borough is coming their way, they could then just go to the ballot box and vote no on the funding mechanism, and of course that de facto would kill the idea of having a borough. So what this does is allow state law that requires that election to be set aside for the incorporation or the annexation that one time only when they vote on, suggested that they become organized government. Any questions on that before I hope I explained that. Fourth change and the last change, go to line 21, middle of the page, new words, on the date of the annexation. This issue has to do, and this is from the Department of Natural Resources, their concern is that, and this has to do with annexation, if a borough reached out and it was deemed appropriate by the LPC under this legislation to be annexed, then it could be construed that under state law that the borough would be is entitled to 10% of the property in that borough, that state land that occurred at the time of incorporation. But incorporation may have happened 20 years earlier or 30 years earlier. We don't want to go back to that time, obviously, because the land records are, there's been transfers of land and it's essentially old data. What this says is that when that vote happens and it's annexed and incorporated, that the land use at that time is where the 10% grant to the new municipality, the new government, comes from. This obviously is a, this still takes the process, so we're not looking, we don't have a 30-year look back on land, but also the department has commented that the state of Alaska owns more land today than they did, say, 20 or 30 years ago, so there's more to select from, so this would help the annexed area and the borough. These four amendments or changes to 48 have come to me from a couple of sources, and I'm supportive of all four, and I commend the bill to the committee.
Thank you, Senator Wilkin. Are there questions from the sponsor? Senator Green?
Did you not also include the legislative clip? Is that new at the very beginning? Or is that just moved around?
Thank you. Senator Wilkin, that was put in the community, the CRA
okay,
first.
Okay, I guess I'm looking back at L. Okay, instead of through. Okay, thank you.
Just a moment for Denise. Hoffman?
No.
Oh, I said you had your hand up.
He had an objection to not this. As our working group, I did. I removed my objection.
I couldn't hear
you. My objection.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. But the acoustics in this room are just unbelievable. Senator Osterman?
Yeah, just a quick discussion I want to have. I talked, passed those back forth to Senator Wilkins about the effective date on this thing is kind of immediate effective date, and I was kind of toying with the idea of a delayed effective date, because there are some communities out there that once this is placed in law, that now have their own sales tax, for example, and they take their like block down into Wells Island, they collect 5.5%, they dedicate 2% of that to their schools. But they're very nervous about when they pass this thing, all of a sudden they're going to be engulfed. And so they were looking at the ability, once it's a law that they have to form, that gives them an opportunity to do their own thing before the court comes in and forces them into whatever arrangement they would end up with. But as Senator Wilkins indicated, maybe the 2 a year might extend it out enough to give those communities and stuff an opportunity to see the handwriting on the wall and do their own thing.
Senator Wilkins, comment on that?
Well, I've been here 4 years, and there are some areas, just from my cursory knowledge, that are what I'll say right to help, and I'm looking for K-12 dollars just about every day. And I think this bill does sell patients, and in fact, some would suggest that it's too patient. And I have to battle that battle also. There are some areas that are recalcitrant at best to step up and help. And I think that this bill says that this state is serious about it. And I would also suggest that if an area is nominated and they went to the LBC and said, okay, we'll do it ourselves, the LBC would have certainly be able to back off and let them follow through on their promise. But I know of at least one, maybe two, that has been promising me that they were serious about organizing for 4 years. And they're no further ahead today than they were 4 years ago, in spite of the letter writing campaign. I would just ask that we stay current, we stay close coupled on the effective date. It shows we're serious, and it also shows by the intent of the bill that we're also patient. If people do want to use existing law, as it is today, that law is there for them to follow, and we would be respectful of that.
Thanks, Senator Wilkin. We have Mr. Waring, Kevin Waring, from the local Boundary Commission. Mr. Waring, do you have comments on this? One more time. Mr. Waring, are you online? Kevin Waring? Apparently not. We don't have anyone else to testify. Senator Wilson, do you have any more comments? Senator Wilson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Certainly the bill is one that's going to be talked about, looked at, and bantered around for a bit. It was my privilege to be in with the subcommittee as they took the testimony over the telephone the other day. And one thing that came out is that one of the reasons that we do stay here in Alaska is because we are independent. We are independent thinkers. Nobody likes the idea that we're going to be ramming anything down anybody's throat and that people don't have any input into what's going on. And that's troublesome to anybody, especially of our mentality here as young Alaskans that are going out to get things done. Looking around the table here, certainly that seems to be the same as to why we live here in Alaska. One of the things that really bothers me, especially in this in the revised state here, is on page 5, under the changes that were made there between line 10 and or line 12 and line 15, besides having a burl pushed down on those of us or those people that do not want it, we also see that, as the last part, the rates included in the incorporation petition approved by the commission without ratification by the voters, which is, nobody likes to be taxed without having any influence on what they're being taxed on. And so because of that, I think that goes against what we as individuals want to live up here by. We want to have an influence on where we're going to live, whether we're going to live in a borough, and especially if they're starting to say, if they're the government is starting to take money out of our pocket. We want to have a say-so. And that's what this bill seems to be doing away with. I guess my question to the sponsor is that indeed the case?
Senator Olson, I think that the thrust of the bill really isn't what you've said. The thrust of the bill is that there are communities in this state that receive money but don't chip in. And if you don't, I guess the hard sell of this is if you don't want government, then maybe you shouldn't receive the other money that comes to you without, not you particularly, but without paying some on your own. And I've always seen this as a bill that says, if you can't pay, we understand that in this state, that there are going to be communities that simply will not be able to pay, and that's understood. But there probably are some that can. And if you can, you probably ought to pay something towards specifically cost of education, like so many other communities in the state do. Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Olson, I just remind you, and we talked about it earlier, 83% of Alaskans have had government crammed down our throats in the early 60s, and frankly, we're better for it, and most of the time. We are the only state in the union that doesn't have, that has unorganized areas, and to follow up on Senator Kelly said, there are some sidebars to this legislation. One is that I think when you write a check for your schools or for your roads or other things, and you have some involvement through your checkbook, you pay attention a little more to what's happening to that effort from which you have written, for which you've written that check. That improves the education. And so I forget what the other one was. Anyway, I would just say that this is simply what this, oh, I know the other one, is that if you can't help, help, as I said in my presentation, you can't help, help. If you can, let's figure out why not, so that we can focus our resources not on this whole area, but on the areas that can't help, and over a period of time get them to have an economy, that they can help with education. So it helps the state of Alaska focus its resources on those folks that need it. And those that don't need it, we shouldn't be helping the state. The state shouldn't be helping those that need it. We should be helping those that don't need it. They should be help pay for their education. That's the thrust of the bill.
Senator Hoffman.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I think that you pointed out a very good point about payment. You know, can they pay? And one of the major problems in the unorganized boroughs are that the majority of the land is federal land, and because of that, the state of Alaska receives payment in lieu of taxes from the federal government. And I might point out two districts that are out there, the Lower Kuskokwim School District and the Bering State School District, Bering Straits. They have, in lieu of taxes, they receive, LKSD receives approximately $8.3 million in taxes, payment in lieu of taxes, and Bering Straits receives $5.6 million. And if you take their ADM, the Lower Kuskokwim School District is approximately $3,600, and Bering Straits is approximately $1,700. And if you divide that in on a per-student basis, what is that tax? That tax equates to $2,287 for LKSD and $3,226 for Bering Straits. Now, if you accept that the impact aid or the in lieu of taxes is for tax land that cannot be taxed, and that is the case, then the rest of the land shall be taxed. And then you look at Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau. Their local effort, Anchorage is basically $62 million, Fairbanks is $18 million, and Juneau is about $10 million. And respectively, their impact aid, Anchorage is $5 million, Fairbanks is approximately $5 million, and Juneau is negligible. And then you take their ADM, which Anchorage is $48,000. Juneau is $5,000 and Fairbanks is $15,000. You add those, the local effort and the impact aid, and you divide it by the ADM, it's surprising to show that at that rate, per tax effort by Anchorage is $1,400, Fairbanks is $1,600, Juneau is $1,800. This compares to the Lower Custom School District at $2,200 and Bering Straits at $3,200. So if you take that as a fair share, then these people are, because of their land status being federal land and their taxes being contributed by the federal government in lieu of taxes, they are far in excess of what Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau are paying.
Senator Hoffman, I see where you're going with that, and I mean, I appreciate the math and everything, but does that also take into consideration that Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau also contribute their own taxes on top of that?
Well, we're talking about, this bill talks about fair and equitable for, this is the Equity in Education Act, and that's what we're talking about. And that's what this bill, that's what Senator Wilkins says that this bill is doing. And if we're talking about fair and equity, equity in education funding, then these districts are paying more than their fair share in comparison to the largest three communities in the state.
Those particular districts, what are the, would they be right under this bill to?
I don't know. I'm not part of the study. I don't know which ones are right and which ones aren't, compared to what Senator Wilkin has presented, and I don't know if he knows. But these, you know, if we want to consider that, maybe we could look at all of the other areas and see what the ADM is on federal impact aid funds, because one of the primary reasons that the areas are still unorganized is that a substantial portion of their lands are federal.
Thanks, Senator Hoffman. Senator Wilkin.
Chairman, I've hesitated to get into the PL 874 discussion because eyes glaze over, but I would just suggest to Senator Hoffman that the fallacy in his argument or his discussion is that 874 money is local contribution. I object to that because it's no more local contribution than the 874 money that comes to my community. It's being matched in a federal formula by local contribution. So we can go through how all that works, and it's kind of fascinating. How the $95 million is divvied up last year. But what's really important is this idea that 874 is local contribution. It's not. And I didn't pass out copies, but I'll be glad to give this to you. This is a letter from the United States Department of Education, March 29th of 2000. And it talks about the 874 money, and I'll make copies of this. Item B, financial need of such agencies for the provisions of free public education for children served by such an agency, talking about the Department of Education, except that a state may consider as local resources funds received under this title, that's 874, only in proportion to the share that local tax revenues covered under a state equalization program are of the total local tax revenues. If you don't pay any taxes locally for education, you do not get to claim 874 money as local contribution. And I'll pass this out, but this ought to end the discussion about whether 874 money is local contribution. It's not, and the federal government tells us that.
Senator Hoffman, somehow I figured that maybe this didn't end the discussion. Do you have a comment?
Yes, it didn't. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The problem is that under this bill, we have to look at taxing property in order to raise the local effort. When you are restricted by the number of acres that you have because they are federal, that limits your ability to collect those taxes. And that's why the federal government calls them in lieu of taxes. They're in exchange for those taxes. Because if you did not have those federal lands, they would be taxable lands. So that takes away from that area's ability to raise local effort. So it seems to me that it would be logical that they should be counted as local effort. What would be the case if we had a district that 95% of their lands was federal and only 5% was able to be taxed? And then you had the communities in there, because many of the communities are on, in my district, many of the lands are still federally owned that the communities live on.
Senator Wilkin, as a practical matter, and I know it could happen, but those communities, if you describe the community that had 95% or an area with 95% federal land, that community probably wouldn't be on the top of the list for the Boundary Commission for organization.
I would imagine not.
I think that's the, Senator Hoffman, that you, I agree with your point that if you have that much federal land, that your ability is decreased. There's no question about that. But, and I also think that, that probably means you're not in anybody's crosshairs as far as organization. Are there, Senator Hoffman, I'm sorry.
Well, when you look at the land ownership of the state of Alaska, you know, we all complain that the federal government owns too much land in the western states. In Alaska's portion, what is the composition? We have 67% of the land in the state of Alaska that's exempt from taxation because it's federal land. You know, that is the problem that we face. You know, and if 67% of the land is not taxable, and then you take the state and you're saying that a major portion or a large portion is taxed or formed in boroughs, I would venture to say that those boroughs that are formed have substantially more of the taxable land, and the 67% that's left, a substantial portion of those are in the unorganized borough. That's the way it is.
Thanks, Senator Hoffman. Any other questions or comments? Senator Wilkin, all the motions have been made. All your amendments were in the CS, weren't they?
Yes.
Okay. Senator Wilkin?
Do you have a moment, Senator Wilkin? Pardon me?
I'm going to take just a brief case. Senator Wilkin?
Just remember your gubernatorial ambitions.
Chairman, I would move the report Senate Bill 48 from the committee with individual recommendations and attach this.
Are there objections?
Objections.
Mindy, could you call the roll? That we are adjourned. Thank you all.